number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. It is a great day, great in the sense of being consequential. It could be the last day before a government shutdown, which is scheduled at 1 minute after midnight tonight. Does that mean that people who are supposed to be there at 11 p.m. still go to work? Yeah, it does. And does it mean if the government shuts down that there will be close to a million, at least 800,000 people who are at least temporarily and involuntarily furloughed from their work, let off work? Yes, it does. Does it mean right now, pending action by the Senate, that our military will not get paid, though they will be expected to continue on duty? Yes, it does. Is any of this cheerful, happy, worth celebrating, worth having a party over? Well, not exactly. I don't think so. And what is it all about? Well, part of what it is about is a desperate attempt by some conservatives to stop the growth of a huge, regulatory, intrusive, big government entitlement state. And when it comes to fighting that state, there is a new book that is the subject of this Science and Culture Hour by Jay Richards, who is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute right here in Seattle. The book is called Infiltrated: How to Stop the Insiders and Activists Who Are Exploiting the Financial Crisis to Control Our Lives and Our Fortunes. Jay, Obamacare kicks in tomorrow. And regardless of whether the government shuts down or regardless of whether the lights go off, Obamacare gets switched on. People start signing up at these exchanges that are opening up in most states, and folks will be signing up starting tomorrow. Is Obamacare part of this power grab that you're talking about in Infiltrated?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, what happened in 2010 is, of course, President Obama had this massive agenda to take over 16% of the economy, and it had to do with our private health care. And so we're all focused on that. I honestly think the economic logic of Obamacare just doesn't work. I think the thing is going to either have to be transformed or it's going to collapse. What people didn't notice is that, you know, in summer of that same year, 2010, the Congress passed an 850-page bill called Dodd-Frank, and it had to do with financial services. It was supposed to fix the causes that led to the financial crisis. But unless you were in finance and banking, you probably didn't pay attention because you're focused on something important like your health care. The frustrating thing about Dodd-Frank is it not only doesn't fix the problems that led to the financial crisis, if you look at it, it's really just an attempt, as you said, to increase the power of the administrative and entitlement state over, in this case, the entire financial sector of our economy.
And right now, there are a lot of people who are saying that if we don't raise the debt ceiling by the end of October, some people say if we need to raise the debt ceiling by October 17th, that that could precipitate another financial crisis with more banks folding and collapsing. Does Dodd-Frank prevent the government from rescuing those banks like the government did last time?
No, not at all. In fact, that's the, you know, the famous too big to fail mentality, which existed really as a mentality more than a policy prior to the financial crisis, and which was confirmed when government bailed out everybody but Lehman Brothers and nationalized Fannie and Freddie. What's funny is, as a result of Dodd-Frank, remember, which was supposed to fix the problems that led to the financial crisis, we now dub large financial institutions as systemically important. I mean, that's a sort of fancy bureaucratic word for too big to fail. And so it's not like we've gotten out of the woods. If we have another banking crisis, I expect the government will be as intrusive as it was in 2008. It unfortunately hasn't learned the lessons of that crisis.
What can we do?
Well, honestly, I think that we have to change the incentives of politicians. I mean, at the moment, it's, you know, just focusing on Dodd-Frank and the financial crisis, the American public's been indoctrinated that for 5 years that this was a result of, you know, greedy cowboys on Wall Street. The government didn't play a role. If anything, it sort of saved us. Even congressmen and congresswomen who know the real story don't have a political incentive to take this on because they assume, I think wisely, that three-fourths of their constituents would oppose them. And so what we've got to do if we want to turn this thing around is first educate ourselves on what exactly is going on, and then talk and contact our representatives and tell them that if they take on the big issues and tell us the hard truths, that you'll support them. I think it's the only thing in the near term that could happen to change this. The politicians have to have their incentives changed.
1-800-955-1776 is our phone number. We're speaking to Dr. Jay Richards. He has his PhD from Princeton University. He is the author of Infiltrated most recently. His previous book, which is a profound and important book philosophically, is called Money, Greed, and God. And here, this is one of those things where people, of course, on the left love to smear Republicans. And one of the things that's sort of ironic is that Republicans are smeared, conservatives are smeared, at the same time, simultaneously, for being opposed to Darwinism and also for being practitioners of social Darwinism, believing in an economic system that provides only for survival of the fittest. So which is it? Or do we have a problem because we're too Darwinian or not Darwinian enough?
I think the problem is the misrepresentation by those who say that of what the free market system actually does. I mean, yes, of course, if capitalism means that the few strong prey on and destroy and enslave the weak, that would be sort of a straight Darwinian economic program. But that's not what happens when you have a free economy. Yeah, some people get fabulously wealthy, but free exchange, very logic of free exchange, is it doesn't happen unless both participants think that they're going to be better off as a result. And in a free market system, wealth is created much more abundantly than in any other economic system. And so the problem is first identifying capitalism with Darwinism and focusing primarily on competition, when in reality, of course, competition is a crucial part of a free economy. It drives down prices and increases quality, but it's just as much about creativity and ingenuity and cooperation as it is competition.
There have been some politicians in the last century who were great, great admirers of Charles Darwin, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, you know, you can look historically in the late 19th and early 20th century, you had some people that actually tried to justify capitalism and defended it in Darwinian terms. In fact, there were even critics of the welfare state. And it wasn't a criticism of big government. It was a criticism that, you know, by helping the weak and the infirm and the widowed and the orphans, we're polluting the gene pool so that, you know, these policies would actually, work across purposes with social goods. I mean, this is the whole point of eugenics, was to either passively or to actively sort of, quote, improve the gene pool. So there were certainly some people that tried to defend capitalism in Darwinian terms, but there are just as many that defended socialism in Darwinian terms. And if you look the actual philosophical background of these ideas, materialism, well, capitalism and the free market, they don't actually make sense in terms of materialism, because if you're a materialist, you think we're just the result of matter in motion. You know, we do what our genes tell us to do or what the laws of physics tell us to do. On the other hand, if you're a theist and you think human beings are created in the image of God and we have ingenuity and creativity and we can transform the material world into resources, that's going to give you a completely different economic view. And socialism, on the other hand, of course, in its Marxist form, was inspired by dialectical materialism. So the fact that there are a few intellectuals that defended capitalism in Darwinian terms, I don't think tells us anything about the sort of philosophical foundations of the free economy or about the compatibility of traditional religion with the free market.
Well, I understand that Stalin actually credited Darwin with converting him to atheism. He at one time had studied for the priesthood. And Lenin, apparently on his desk at the Kremlin, had a little statue showing a monkey looking at a human skull with the word Darwin embossed on the statue. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the affinities of the ideas are obvious. I mean, the Marxists hoped that something other than just random mutations could change society, but they loved the fact that, in their view, Darwin had destroyed the power and influence of Christianity and theism in Western culture.
1-800-955-1776. We're talking to Jay Richards. He is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute. This Science and Culture Hour. If you want to be brought up to date with all of the latest and the battle of ideas behind today's politics. You can subscribe to the Discovery Institute weekly newsletter. It's free. It's Nota Bene. Click on the science and culture icon at michaelmedved.com. And you can find out more about Dr. Richard's new book, Infiltrated, and his prior bestseller, Money, Greed, and God. When we come back, what would be the right way to redo or fix or repair or erase healthcare reform? We'll get to that and more with Jay Richards, plus your calls. Jay Richards, who is a senior fellow at Discovery Institute. Dr. Richards is the author of the previous bestseller, Money, Greed, and God. He is the author most recently of Infiltrated, which is about the regulatory state and how groups of activists and ideologues have really moved to take over much of the U.S. government and our regulatory apparatus. Jay, one of the points that you make, which is so profound, is the idea that people identify the cause of compassion with the cause of big government. Why is it wrong to assume that a more activist government is by definition more compassionate?
Well, it's wrong, but I mean, just empirically and historically. I mean, even if, for instance, you have nothing but compassionate people at the, you know, HHS or at HUD or at the Department of Labor, simply because of their distance, they can't possibly treat someone, say, a child who has particular food allergies in Seattle. That requires that somebody be on the ground nearby. This is why I think we shouldn't be surprised to find that local charities and charities that deal with specific people or connect donors to specific people, even overseas, are inevitably more effective than centralized government programs. It's not that people working in government are all evil or uncompassionate. It's just, it's really, you know, at the bottom of it, it's an information problem. They can't deliver their goods. The centralized state has a core competence. It has its competences in protecting us from foreign aggressors primarily. And unfortunately, when it tries to do other things that are better done in the private sector and in civil society, it makes a mess of it.
Let's go to your calls, 1-800-955-1776. Charles, in Greenville, South Carolina, you're on the MedVed Show with Dr. Jay Richards.
Hey, how are you today?
Very well indeed.
I wanted to just throw a couple of things at you. Number one, as far as placing blame on what's about could happen or is about to happen, I really think government as a whole is to blame. You know, some want to say it's the Republicans, some want to say it's Democrats. Both parties are trying to throw it at each other. I think it's just a shame that these people are done working for us and basically just stroking each other's egos. I told your screener, I'm not big into politics. I'm a policeman. I make $35,000 a year and struggle to survive. And that leads me to my next point. I can only give testament to what I've seen happen with health insurance in the past year. We're up for renewal for our coverage, and we're looking at saving around $60 every pay period for the coverage that we pay for our families. My wife is a caretaker for an elderly.
Now, hold on. The coverage that you pay for your family, is that through the police department? Is that through city?
Yeah, it's through the city that we work for, the county that we work for.
Right. So it probably you're pretty much untouched by Obamacare, right?
Well, the thing is, the letter that we got, and every year we get a letter saying that we can review our enrollments, and the letter said that due to changes in legislation, you will be able to save some money this year. We haven't been to the meeting yet. It's almost like going to a union meeting. It's very complicated. I as long as I see a better bottom dollar, I sign on the dotted line, because, like I said, if my brain's not made to understand that kind of stuff without...
mine either. I don't. I am completely confused by all of the forms. What do you say to Charles J. Richards? He says he could end up saving some money. $60 a month is not nothing. It's a lot on Obamacare.
The reality is any policy is going to have benefits for someone and cost for others. But the idea that Obamacare is going to lower costs and improve service for the vast majority of people defies economic common sense. Scarcity is scarcity. There's a set but hopefully growing amount of supply in terms of medical care that's available. And when suddenly the market is sort of cast open and some people are going to now be in the system that aren't paying their part in it, there's no way that's going to decrease costs. Now, it's certainly, I will assume that Charles has got this accurately, but I think it's important for all of us as Americans not to simply make the narrow kind of self-interested conclusion that, well, this happens to help me in my situation, so it's a good thing. The fact that you might be in a preferred category in which you benefit from a program doesn't mean that the program as a whole is good for the country or good for the majority of the American public. And I think simple economic common sense tells you that what this is going to do overall is it's going to mess up service. It's going to make service much worse in general. It's going to increase costs, and it's going to scramble the economic incentives even more than they were prior to Obamacare passing.
Let's go to Susan in Chicago. Susan, you're on the MedVed Show with Dr. Jay Richards.
Hi. Shouldn't seniors be upset? $800 billion taken out of Medicare to build this vast bureaucracy for Obamacare, and that top-down, centralized, Soviet-style control of pricing, IPAB. It'll price your medical treatments and your drugs and, of course, ration them through pricing. This is President Obama's board.
Jay?
Absolutely. I mean, I do think that Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid are going to have to be reformed. I don't think they should be reformed in a way in which current recipients are somehow cut out. I think we need to start raising the minimum age for retirement and for receiving those things, because otherwise they're going to go bankrupt and bankrupt the country.
That's what I would be for when you talk about seniors. What seniors should be angry about is that money was taken out to fund Obamacare. It wasn't taken out to save Medicare, which desperately needs saving. We'll get to that and more with Jay Richards, and more of your calls coming up.
1-800-95-
Jay Richards is our guest this Science and Culture Hour with Discovery Institute. Jay is a senior fellow at Discovery. He works on issues of faith and freedom, on issues of justice and the free market. And right now he has a new book called Infiltrated, about the assault on private property, and that's really what it ends up being, by insiders and activists who are exploiting the financial crisis to control our lives and our fortunes. Jay, what's so important about private property?
Well, private property is a foundation, both of us are protection of the individual and our dignity. If we don't have the right to the fruits of our labor, if we're not allowed, to at least pursue the possibility of property for providing for ourselves and for our families, the idea of self-determination and of dignity for the individual is just simply empty. And so anyone who believes in individual rights, who believes that human beings are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, needs to support the institution of private property. Second, we know empirically from about 30 years of detailed study that the more economic freedom that a country enjoys, the more prosperous it is, the more people are lifted out of poverty. These are the things we should want in an economic system. And so I get frustrated, especially when religious people act as if the institution of private property is just about, me keeping my stuff and hoarding my wealth. That's not what the institution of private property is ultimately about. As the American founders knew, it's essentially a boundary that protects our rights over against our other fellow human beings that might like to steal from us, or the overweening power of the state.
Let's go to your calls and to Linda in Columbus, Ohio. You're on the Michael Medved Show with Dr. Jay Richards.
Thanks for taking my call. Well, I guess you have to number me in the 10% because not that I...
Wait, which 10%? The 10% who 10% are satisfied or happy about a government shutdown?
I think this may be a fatal miscalculation on the part of Barack Obama. I think this whole thing may backfire on him.
I hope you're right.
Well, and here's why. I live in the country. I live in a predominantly Caucasian rural area where people aren't doing very well. And I commute over an hour to get to a predominantly African-American rural or urban area, where people aren't doing very well. And I think he's overestimating the support in his African-American base. I really do. because the kids I work with, I seem to sense that something's wrong. And now I'm conservative, and I never proselytize, but I'm a teacher. And it's my responsibility to give these children an honest answer if they ask me a question. And they are asking me questions about Barack Obama. And I'm
what do they ask you?
What are they asking?
Yeah, what do they ask?
The usual scenario is it starts off, who'd you vote for? And I say, I voted for Mitt Romney. And they don't attack me, and they don't call me a racist. They say, why? And I say, because I'm really disappointed with Barack Obama, because the people who love him the most and the people who support him the most are paying a high price for this presidency.
Good for you. Go ahead.
For instance, did you know that, you know, black teenage African-American male unemployment is higher now than it was under George Bush? They don't know that. Did you know that food stamps are up? Did you know that poverty is up? Did you know that the rich people continue to get richer under this president? Did you know that you're paying more taxes while the rich people are paying the same taxes? And he hasn't raised taxes on the truly rich people in this country. See, they don't know that. And they sense that something.
Now, have you gotten in any trouble with the school district? It sounds
no,
like you.
I have not, because first of all, if they're going to say something to me, you know, the first thing I'm going to say to them, I'm going to say, okay, fine. You have all of the other teachers take their Barack pictures down from their rooms, and then we'll talk. That's number one. Number two, like I said, I never proselytize. They're asking me what I think.
Okay, Linda, it sounds like you're doing a terrific job. Jay Richards, you agree?
Absolutely. In fact, I think I generally oppose human cloning, but I think maybe that we should support it in her particular case. If she's a teacher in public schools, I say it'd be great to have a lot more like her.
Okay, absolutely right, Linda. And by the way, I want to keep you on the line because we want to send you as a gift any MedVed history program of your choice, including there's one about the whole history of the federal tax system. Stay on the line, and we'll get your address. And keep the faith, Linda. We'll even survive a government shutdown. Somehow. I'm not sure how, but we will. We'll be right back with Dr. Jay Richards. Jay, what if you were advising President Obama, and he should be so lucky. Jay is the author of Infiltrated most recently. He's also the co-author of a New York Times bestseller called Indivisible and another bestseller called Money, Greed, and God. What would you advise the president to say in this situation?
Well, honestly, I mean, I think both the Republicans in the House and the president are in a bit of a difficult position because they're playing chicken. And so my own view is that the person that caves is probably going to be the one that's going to be harmed. That's my worry, is that the Republicans are going to cave, frankly. But I do think if I was just a political advisor for the president, that I would have him talk about compassion and his care for ordinary Americans and poor Americans who not only are going to lose health care, you know, if this goes through, but are actually going to suffer from a loss of government services and all these kinds of things. I mean, I assume that this is something like what he's going to say. He's going to personalize it, and he expects that most people won't realize the profound issues that are at stake in this battle. And it's really a question of whether the state in Washington, D.C. is eventually simply going to absorb the private society, private sector, and civil society that's outside the power of the government.
Well, yeah. Don't you suspect that he could gain a lot and actually help the country if he said something like, look, let's all stop the squabbling. I want everybody to come over to the White House. We'll have dinner together tonight. And at the end, we'll figure out some way to keep this government open while we work on some kind of long-term compromise to our problems. Wouldn't that serve him better than this, I will never negotiate, I won't even speak to them?
Perhaps. And in fact, maybe we all just need to be praying about that right now, because I think the country would certainly be a lot better off if the president decided to do that. Of course, the way these things are reported, it would be treated as him, you know, being the first one to blink. But I do think if, you know, he really has the interests of the country in mind, that's what he ought to do. I mean, because
yes, the one thing that's very
saying, let's drop Obamacare. They're just saying we need to fix a couple of things.
Well, and now. I mean, it's changed over the last few days, but it's a changing situation. The one thing that Mark Zandi of Moody's Analytics, who has looked at what the impact of all this is going to be, it's just economically, and you write about economics a great deal. They're saying that there will be a 2/10 of a decline in the GDP. Even if there's a shutdown that lasts less than 4 days, if there's a shutdown that lasts a month or more, they're saying 1.5 points off the GDP. And if it's a shutdown that lasts more than 3 months, they're predicting full recession. So,
yeah, I mean, the reality is that this would have severe economic consequences. Now, you know, my view is that things have costs and they have benefits. And if you know, a week and a little shave off of the GDP for the year was a price that we paid and we got rid of Obamacare, or at least we got to redebate the details of it, I think that would be worth the price. My fear is that we'll have a shutdown, we will harm the economy, and we won't actually be anywhere because the House Republicans will end up caving. And we'll
what's the alternative to caving? I don't see Jay at all. Is that the Obamacare, the exchanges, they all kick in regardless of a shutdown. They kick in on schedule because it's mandatory spending and it's protected.
Yes, that's what's sort of strange. I myself wanted the Republicans to fight the implementation of Obamacare. I don't think it was a politically especially wise decision to tie it directly to this so that we'd end up with a shutdown.
Yeah.
But, you know, everyone is talking about Obamacare right now, and so I think everyone's going to notice. Frankly, the majority of the American public who find their insurance premiums go up rather than down, they'll identify it because this is the national conversation.
Well, I think you're exactly right in that. 1-800-955-1776, our phone number. Tom in Glendora. Tom, you're on the MedVed Show with Dr. Richards.
Hey, thank you, Michael. Dr. Richards, it's an honor to speak to a God-fearing freedom lover like you, sir.
Thank you.
And I am very worried about a freedom-crushing and I think economy-crushing problem, and I'd like your opinion on how to fix it. I would argue that the EPA, which stands for Economy Paralyzing Autocrats, or maybe Extremely Pompous Airheads, there are other acronyms, but it's a family show, I better stop. But I would submit, sir, that the Obama EPA is so out of control, acting with an extremely destructive green energy agenda, killing the free market economy with absurdly extreme regulations on coal, on hydraulic fracturing, which get at the actual heart.
Okay, you got to get to the question. We're going to run out of time.
And the question is, I'm a reasonable environmentalist. I'm not an idiot. But how do we stop the destructive effects of this monster, the Obama EPA?
Okay, what do we do, Jay?
Well, honestly, we need to be aware of what's happening because there's, you know, essentially a shadow government, a very large bureaucracy, and the EPA is behind the scenes actually increasing its control, certainly over the energy economy. You mentioned coal, but fracking, gasoline, and carbon. I mean, the regulation of carbon by the EPA essentially gives it carte blanche control over the energy sector of our economy. And it's yet another thing to worry about.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the EPA does not close down in a government shutdown. I mean, this is part of the problem, is one of the lessons, and there are a lot of Republicans who are pointing this out, frankly, right now, is you don't go to a government shutdown, especially not when the other side controls the executive branch, because they get to determine what shuts down and what stays open, and they're going to... That's why they're closing the national parks, because nobody wants that. And so that's, of course, the first thing they're doing. The national parks, 400 of them, boom, completely closed. Reason to celebrate? You don't like bears? We'll be right back with Jay Richards. We're speaking to a much better and clearer economic thinker. His name is Jay Richards. He is a senior fellow of Discovery Institute, part of our Science and Culture Hour from Discovery Institute. You can check out his new book, Infiltrated, How to Stomp the Insiders and Activists Who Are Exploiting the Financial Crisis to Control Our Lives and Our Fortunes. It's posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. Let's go to Bill in Seattle. Bill, you're on the Michael Medved Show with Jay Richards.
Hey, Mike. Really enjoy your show. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hey, just walked up to the mailbox on Friday afternoon, gingerly opened my letter from Regent Insurance Company, and my rates for a family of five self-insured went from $805 a month to $1,250 a month to keep my policy exactly the same way it is. However, they're going to eliminate all co-pays for all five family members. And if I want my policy to stay exactly the same with the co-pay benefit, it goes from $805 a month to $1,630 a month. So I have two choices, a 50% increase or a 100% increase. And I just want to thank President Obama for lowering my rates.
I mean, by the way, your insurance, it sounds like we have the same, but your insurance policy is very, very close to ours. And we've had the same experience, and it stinks. Jay Richards, your comment?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that the costs are going to hit people disproportionately. If you're self-insured, you're in for a rude awakening. I mean, the fact that there may be unusual circumstances, you know, that will go down. I think the vast majority of people will go up at least a little bit in the near term. And I think we can expect a continued increase in costs and a decrease in the quality of American healthcare in the next few years if this happens.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, it's this kind of thing that has led some people to believe that what the Republicans really should do is let the American people see how well this works. And then there will be a lot more appetite for change. You think, Jay Richards?
I do. In fact, I agree with that, because I honestly think that unlike Dodd-Frank, which is well designed to increase the government ratchet, Obamacare, it just makes absolutely no sense economically. It's rickety. It's likely very quickly to anger a lot of people. And honestly, I think having it implemented, I would like to have seen it stop. But if we can't stop it, I honestly think the implementation itself might be our next best opportunity to get it overturned.
Well, exactly right. And to send the message very, very clearly that this fight is just beginning. We got to get past this government shutdown. It takes attention away from the real issue. The real issue, as Jay Richards so well points out, is always freedom and the idea of defending private enterprise in the free market for this greatest nation on God's green earth.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.